This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, July 31st, 2009. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the poetry is what survives. About 3 months ago, at the end of April, the poet Craig Arnold went missing. He had gone on a hike by himself to explore an active volcano on an island off the coast of Japan. When he didn't come back to his hotel, Japanese authorities launched a search. They didn't locate him, nor did an American search team. They found his trail, but no one has yet found his body. The assumption is he fell off a cliff. In any case, Craig Arnold has vanished. He was only 41, but he left behind poems that have won high praise from the likes of W.S. Merwin, Mark Strand, and Robert Pensky. I'm joined by Christian Wyman, the editor of Poetry Magazine and the co-host of the Poetry Magazine podcast. And we're going to listen together to a few Craig Arnold poems. Poetry Magazine has published Craig Arnold several times in the past few years, and the magazine is planning a tribute to him, including some previously unpublished work for the October issue. Now, Chris, you've been reading Craig Arnold's work in preparation for this tribute, and he's also a friend of yours, so you probably know his stuff fairly well. How would you characterize his poetry?
His poetry has changed since his first book. I was surprised rereading the book how tightly coiled some of those forms are. They remind you of Tom Gunn, although it sounds very, very different. And in fact, Tom Gunn has a blurb on the back of his book saying that he should have been a gangster.
Why did he say that?
Well, I guess it's because of the poem. You know, when the first time I met Craig was he was giving a reading, and he read in black leather pants and a black jacket, and which he peeled off during the reading, and he had all of his poems memorized, and they were quite long, his poems, and he acted them out very theatrically, and I loved it. It's the kind of thing ordinarily I would hate, but he was so consuming. I've never met anyone in my life who had the kind of charisma that he had.
It may have had something to do with he was also a musician. He performed a lot, so he liked performance, right?
He loved performance, yeah. He really thrived in it, and he moved away from it performing his poems that way. He told me last time he was in Chicago, which was actually just not long before he died, he was staying with me and my wife, and he said that he had moved away from it because he thought it sort of took people's attention away from the poems. And his poems are very highly wrought objects. He felt that he was sort of diminishing his own poems by calling so much theatrical attention to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, his first book, Shells, was selected by W.S. Merwin as the winner of the Yale Younger Poets Competition. That's sort of one of the main vehicles for a poet to hit the big time in this country. And
right.
And you were saying his poems have changed since then. What's changed about them?
They're not so tightly coiled. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't use meter and rhyme as much as he did. The great thing about Craig's poetry is how much experience he gets into the poetry. And in the early poetry, you can feel him standing apart from it and looking at experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true of Made Flesh, the book that he published a year or two ago. He is completely in those poems, and there is something so completely consuming about them that you feel he's come to inhabit his language utterly. I guess that's the distinction that I would draw there.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's listen to one of his poems. And we're pulling this from a YouTube video produced by the MFA program in creative writing at the University of Wyoming, where he taught. This is a short lyric from a longer poem called Asunder. Is there anything you want to say about this to set it up?
Well, it's a poem in which the speaker seems to have lost his lover. It seems like she died. It's a little bit oblique. And you can't get it from these sections that he reads on this video, but it helps to know that. In the other sections, that becomes more fleshed out.
Okay. Here's Craig Arnold reading a section from Asunder.
A glass is offered. Look. Take it before it falls and shatters. Take it firmly or it will slip out of your fingers. But too strong a grip will break it. Even the warmth of a hand might swell it so abruptly that it pulls itself to pieces. Put it down. You've held it too long already, but there is no place safe to put it down. No one to pass it to, no one to share the burden of such lightness, such eggshell fragility. It's going to break sooner or later. Better to smash it now and get it over with. Better to be kind. And it was beautiful. And it could hold all of your heart's blood without spilling. It fit the palm of your hand exactly. But now it lies in pieces. Now it points all of its bright knives at you. Now it is broken. Now it is all ruined.
The glass in that poem obviously carries a lot of symbolic weight. I read it as the love of a particular woman or other person, almost really her soul that is being offered to the speakers. Is that how you read it?
Yeah, or perhaps their love together.
A glass is offered. Look. Take it before it falls and shatters. Take it firmly or it will slip out of your fingers. But too strong a grip will break it.
You know, I'm wary of making it too explicitly a metaphor for something else.
Right.
I think it probably is best to see it as a glass. But yeah, it definitely has the sense of something that was intact and then completely ruined. And the rest of the poem makes that really clear.
But now it lies in pieces. Now it points all of its bright knives at you. Now it is broken. Now it is all ruined.
In the very next section, it begins, "My love is sick. She has begun to turn inward upon herself, body peeled back, a rubber glove off of a stranger's hand, the scene growing so many sharp edges." That great line there, "the scene growing so many sharp edges," as if memory itself could be changed by what was happening in the present, so that memory became suddenly dangerous and sharp.
Going back to the fragment that he read, I'm reminded a little bit of Constantine Cavafy's great poem, The City, which argues that you can never escape the city where you've wasted your life. And this poem seems to be saying that you can never get over a love that has disappeared.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And this book is, I guess, one of the things that makes it so powerful is that though it is so sensuous and immediate, it's full of hauntings. It's about something that's completely past, and yet you feel it as completely present when reading the poem. So it's often what poetry is for.
Yeah, it has an intense nostalgia about it without bathos.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, exactly.
What tradition would you place his work in? Who are his forebears? You mentioned Tom Gunn. Who else?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Cavafy. I mean, I think I'd never talked with Craig about Cavafy, but you know, one thing, when you said that, what it made me think of in Craig's work is what he often does is he uses an image and then he will move to an abstraction. And it's something he's done more in Made Flesh than in Shells. And Shells, those end very conventionally with sort of, it's a typical way of ending a lot of contemporary poems with a kind of image. You know, you show, don't tell. But Craig will actually move towards an abstraction in the end, which is reminiscent of Cavafy, who will tell you something direct.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the next section ends, "My love is sick and I'm afraid. Afraid her fear is stronger than my fear for her. And so we are made separate by fear. And so we are afraid and not together." It's a very plain spoken, yet wise summation of a relationship in that stage. You know, someone dying, them not able to make connection.
There's also something, I'm hesitant to say, but there's something kind of old-fashioned about the intensity of the feeling here. There is no irony. It is raw feeling.
Yeah, it is raw feeling, which for me is a relief. You can't find people who write at this level, you know, this quality of writing, and yet have such raw, passionate feeling that is sort of, yeah, it's completely untainted with irony.
Yeah, let's listen to another part of the poem, Asunder. And here the speaker remembers his lost love while looking at fireflies.
Fireflies in the drowsy grass, in the tree's hair, signal an answer. I pluck one out of the air and make my hand a lantern. Look, they are so quick and so many. The field is all a mica glitter. It is a field where you too stood once, your dappled body, contours I would dearly call back to my fingers. I have kept you cupped in my hand, a captive glow, all of you that still sparkles. For your sake, I loved summer, wearing whatever, always sweaty but not caring. I think we shared a longing for kindness and cold water, green water rayed by sunlight, water that lets the body rest from holding itself up. I think we shared a bedtime story and a lullaby. I think one day you talked me into buying a white linen shirt, because it fit. I think that night for the first time I held you with whole hands. That night you said, my body will answer yours, that it was like a prayer. Why did I laugh then when you would let me see through the idea of you to you?
This is a good example of how he moves from an image at the beginning, fireflies and the drowsy grass, to say something at the end that's abstract.
Mm-hmm.
Why did I laugh then when you had let me see through the idea of you to you? And this seems very easy the way he's doing it. His language seems very straightforward.
Right.
But like Cavafy, it's incredibly difficult to do this, you know, and make it convincing.
So you published a handful of Craig Arnold poems in your tenure as the editor there, and one of them is called The Invisible Birds of Central America, which is up on the poetryfoundation.org website. Could you set that one up a little bit and read it?
Sure. We published this in October of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
It's for Alicia, and Alicia is A.E. Stallings, the American poet who lives in Greece, and one of the things we're going to have in our tribute in the fall in October is a poem by Alicia that responds to this, not directly, but somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And this poem is about, you can't tell if these birds are real or not. And in the end, that's sort of part of the meaning of the poem. But it's about being moved by birds that you never see. The Invisible Birds of Central America. The bird who creaks like a rusty playground swing. The bird who sharpens the knife, the bird who blows on the mouths of milk bottles, the bird who bawls like a cat, like a cartoon baby, the bird who rubs the wine glass, the bird who curlicues, the bird who quacks like a duck but is not a duck, the bird who pinks on a jeweler's hammer. They hide behind the sunlight scattered throughout the canopy. At the thud of your feet they fall thoughtful and quiet, coming to life again only when you have passed. Perhaps they are not multiple, but one, a many-mooded trickster whose voice is rich and infinitely various, whose feathers liquefy the rainbow, rippling scarlet, emerald, indigo, whose streaming tail is rare as a comet's, a single glimpse of which is all that you could wish for, the one thing missing, to make your eyes at last feel full to meet this wild need of yours for wonder.
In the most recent Poetry Magazine podcast, you had on the conceptualist poet Kenneth Goldsmith, and he said that context was everything when it came to poetry. And the context of Craig Arnold's poetry now, since his death, is the story of his disappearance. And you've been rereading him, and have you had to struggle against this context to see the poems themselves? Or is that even possible now?
Well, I think it's a little more possible than Kenny does, maybe. But I guess we're slaves to context for a while. I mean, nobody. If you read Sir Walter Raleigh now, you don't sit there and thinking, "Oh my God, he got his head cut off."
Right.
And read all the poems in that light. Context fades, and the poems then emerge out of it, or they don't.
Yeah.
And if they're good enough, they emerge out of it. I suspect his will.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you.
You can read some Craig Arnold poems on our website, poetryfoundation.org. His last book, Made Flesh, is published in paperback by Copper Canyon Press. We always want to hear what you think of this program, what you like, what you don't like, and what you want to hear more of. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox.